afternoon, everyone. Hello. Hi. Okay. Welcome to the first budget committee. Thank you for all the members attending. I see that we are correct. Thank you to the minister for attending. Thank you to the treasury for attending as well. I would like to start the meeting with giving the minister opportunity to just introduce the department and perhaps give an overview, and then we can go over the presentation that we received. Two things, Honourable Juliaka will be a little bit late due to the reduced reasons on a Friday, and just a general point, we received a briefing document at 5 o'clock, well, that was my email inbox time, yesterday afternoon. If I could just please request from the department if we can please have sufficient time for the briefing document. The presentation is 51 pages. While I do understand that you probably did your best to get the budget succinct in terms of summary into the 51 pages, the members still need to go through the documentation and be able to sit down and familiarize themselves with the respective content. Now I'll hand over to Mr.
Mania. Thank you, Chairperson, and let me start by congratulating you on your appointment. Congratulations. I would just like to start by obviously saying that, I mean, members will be aware that not only is this my first committee meeting in the province, it's my first committee meeting on this side of the House, essentially in the firing line. And I certainly look forward over the next 5 years to getting to know you all and working closely with you, which I look forward to. Before coming into the meeting, one member said, but the presentation is 51 pages long. Do you plan to present the entire presentation? And I said, well, the point is that the presentation is only 51 pages long, and yes, the Provincial Treasury intends to present every single one of those pages. But Chair, I really look forward to working with the committee over the next 5 years, and I do take your point about the submission time, which obviously I will discuss with Provincial Treasury. So without further ado, through you, if I could hand over to my head official. Could I ask you to introduce the team?
Good afternoon, Chair and members. I'm the acting head official of the Provincial Treasury. My name is Jolinda Santana. I'm going to ask each member to just briefly introduce himself.
Good afternoon, Chair, members. My name is Emily Spick. I look after public finance within the Provincial Treasury.
Good afternoon, members. Sally Sandiviera within the Provincial Government Budget Office.
Good afternoon, members. Ranal Fema, Public Policy Service.
Good afternoon, members. Klaus Langenhoven on the infrastructure side in Treasury.
Good afternoon, my name is Ilse Pretorius. I'm from the Chief Director of Strategic Management Information, and we're responsible for the non-financial information.
Jacques Barra, Department of Premier, non-financial performance.
Good afternoon, members. Mark November, Provincial Treasury.
Good afternoon, I'm Paul Pinard, Provincial Treasury, Business Information and Data Management.
Thank you for that. If I could just ask the members all on my left to also introduce yourself to the department. Thanks.
Good afternoon, my name is Matsuri Matuka.
Good afternoon, Wendy Kalanda, member of this committee.
Peter Marie, member, not a member of the committee, observer.
Good day, Marie Wender, an alternate member of the committee.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Pat Moran, not a member of this committee.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Mesuli Kano. I'm also not a member of the committee. Thank you.
Goedemiddag allemaal. Ik ben als alternatieve lid op de committee.
Good afternoon, Ricardo McKinney. the member looking forward to seeing the 51 pages of the presentation. I just wanted to make sure that we are getting all 51 pages, Minister Mania.
Honourable Deputy Department, Chairperson of the Committee. Okay. For those who wish, I know that we did request translation services if you prefer Afrikaans or Khoisa. On your tables, you will see the interpreting channels should you wish. Okay, so let's start with the introductory briefing by Treasury.
Thank you, Chair, members. Indeed, you've received 51 pages, and we're going to go through all of them. You would have noted that we have a team both from Provincial Treasury as well as the Department of the Premier, and that's because we will be covering both financial as well as the financial information in the session that we're sharing with the Budget Committee. Our first presentation deals just with the introduction to the budget process. We're recognizing that it is the first time that we are appearing in front of the committee. And we just like to provide some overview of that process in terms of the approach of integrated management that we are following within the Western Cape Provincial Government. Within this presentation, we will also indicate at the time during the budget process that we will interact directly with the budget committee. And at what time will we table, when we table certain documents, what will come and then present to the committee. Today is indeed the quarterly engagement, the quarterly reporting, and so I'm going to ask Terence Fanarieda to take us through the first part of the presentation. The second part of the presentation will be dealt with in terms of both the Department of the Premier as well as the Provincial Treasury. So it will be Ms. Zenith Ishmael, who will be joining us later, as well as Ms. Annelies Peck. So, Terence?
So basically, the Provincial Treasury, the Provincial Treasury operates within the broader integrated policy planning budgeting and implementation cycle. And by integrated, I mean taking a more coordinated approach to policy planning, budgeting and implementation, and that is across the Western Cape Government departments and also across the three spheres of government. So the Provincial Treasury, along with its partners, Department of Local Government and the Department of the Premier, as the centre of government departments, are generally responsible for this integrated approach. And the engagements that you see on this slide are either led or supported by these various departments. So the engagements cut across a few areas that include Executive Council interface, Municipal Provincial Interface, Key Provincial Interventions, National Government Forums and the Planning Processes. So important to note is that the Provincial Treasury basically leads in terms of the Key Provincial Interventions, which includes the taping of the Pero and the Meadow in September 2019, the Fiscal Policy Seminar in November, as well as the taping of the Western Cape NTBPS and Adjusted Estimates in November, and then the taping of the 2020 budget in March 2020. But I'll go into more detail with regards to that in the slide which will follow. But important to note as well is the fact that this provincial cycle allows us to take a more coherent and coordinated approach, as well as to ensure the continuity between the various engagements. And therefore also allows the provincial strategy to put in place a more responsive budget, responsive in terms of how it links to the policy environment and then also responsive in terms of the local government context. So I'm not going to take you through the detail of the slide, it just provides the narrative of the previous slide. So when does provincial strategy really engage with the budget committee? So we will kick off in March. Well, this cycle kicks off in March with regards to the taping of the budget. And the budget is essentially the key statement of the policy of government outlining the budget priorities and medium-term expenditure framework. And on the day that we table the budget, we essentially table four documents. This includes the overview of provincial revenue and expenditure, estimates of provincial revenue and expenditure, the overview of provincial and municipal infrastructure investment, and associated appropriation bill. So here we provide the budget committee with the opportunity to really review and provide recommendations to the provincial parliament with regards to the budget table. Then on a quarterly basis, we will bring you the quarterly performance outcomes, which cuts across the areas of non-financial and financial information. And any risks highlighted here, you are then able to take back to your specific portfolio committee for further investigation. In September, we table the FERO and MEDA, which is the Provincial Economic Review and Outlook, which provides the economic intelligence from a provincial perspective, and the Municipal Economic Review and Outlook, which is the economic intelligence at the municipal level. And here again, the Budget Committee is able to review and deliberate on the findings of the FERO and MEDA, but what would also be useful is for you to then apply this economic intelligence as part of your own processes. Then with regards to the annual report process, we will be providing you with an overview of this annual report process as well as the associated annual report guidelines, which is generally updated. And this will also assist you with your preparation for your individual standing committees and standing committee on public accounts. And then lastly, in November, we table the MPBPS and the adjusted estimates. The MPBPS is essentially the framework within which we set the budget. And here the Budget Committee is able to review and provide recommendations to the Provincial Parliament, and it's also really your opportunity to provide input in terms of our budget process. Thank you.
I want to just suggest as well, I think let's finish the presentation and we can take all the questions afterwards at once.
Thank you. So the next presentation is the outcome of the 2018-19 financial year. It is in the numbers from the financial side as well as from the non-financial side in terms of the performance, and it's the pre-audited forms. So these are the numbers that the Auditor General has audited and is in the process in terms of providing an outcome of that. As the acting HOT has indicated that this is a combined presentation on the financial side, we as the Provincial Treasury will take you through, and then also the Department of the Premier will take you through in terms of on the non-financial side. So we thought in terms of the non-financial side, what we first do before we go into the numbers is to contextualize the in-year monitoring of financial management within this government and in terms of the PFMA. So the purpose of the in-year monitoring, it allows for oversight, as we are here in terms of an oversight body in terms of the expenditure and revenue management, and in terms of the foundation of the PFMA in terms of transparency and accountability. It allows for transparency and accountability in terms of financial management. It also allows to be an early warning system in the current financial year on spending and also on revenue collection in order to make sure that we stay within our budget and also apply the budget principles as we tabled at the beginning of a financial year. Then also it allows in terms of the current financial year to look at revenue and expenditure, the actuals that has been spent every quarter or every month, and the projections that the departments provide us, and incorporate that as part of the following budget process. So what actually happens in terms of the budget committee or in terms of financial management within our government is that we're always dealing with three financial years at the same time. We're always dealing with in terms of the previous financial year, we're looking at the monitoring and the implementation of the current budget in the current financial year, and we're utilizing that information to influence the future, the next budget that we will be tabling, that we're working on simultaneously. Ultimately also this in-year monitoring provides us as a foundation for our fiscal discipline principle. So what does that actually mean?
So it means in terms of fiscal discipline, number one, so that we make sure in terms of expenditure and revenue, we're always responding appropriately to remain within budget. Secondly, it also means in terms of fiscal discipline that we are providing the discipline in terms of what the PFMA says we need to do in terms of in-year monitoring. So what does the PFMA say we must do? So that's the next slide in terms of showing in terms of the legislation of what the PFMA says we need to do in terms of in-year monitoring. So in terms of section 44C of the PFMA, it says that an evident accounting officer, and I emphasize the word must, on within 15 days report to the relevant territory and its executive authority on expenditure and revenue, and also needs to indicate where necessary if there are any to indicate in terms of where there are any material variances, the reasons for that. So that's on the 15th of every month, which an accounting officer must do. The provincial treasury, on the other hand, must, on the 22nd day of every month, they need to consolidate all the inputs from the accounting officer and report that to the national treasury. Over and above that, the provincial treasury, we verify the information that is provided by the accounting officer. We scrutinize the material variances indicated by the accounting officers, and we ask questions around that, and we also have the opportunity to return the submission if it's not in line with our fiscal policy. And then lastly, in terms of section 32 of the PFMA, the National Treasury must publish a statement on the province's actual revenue and expenditure, but they do so also for the entire country in terms of the section 32 of the PFMA. So that is in terms of our legislation in terms of the in-year monitoring. So you would probably ask, so this information in terms of the legislation, we know why we're doing it, but where does this information go and who utilizes this information? So firstly, in terms of the middle row over there, you'll see in terms of your IYM, and the IYM stands for your in-year monitoring, and your IRM, because we have one for overall expenditure, is your in-year monitoring, and your in-year reporting model in terms of the database that, as I indicated, the provincial treasury looks at that information. It gets sent to the national treasury, and also the executive authority also receives the databases. That information on a quarterly basis is then reported to the cabinet, the executive, it's to the budget committee yourself, and then also to the National Committee of Provinces, sorry, National Council of Provinces, where we get invited to report on our performance, and then on a quarterly basis it also goes to all the audit committees within the province. So the information, what it gets used for and how does it influence, what does it influence? It influences our policy statement, the Western Cape medium-term budget policy statement, firstly, and also influences the adjustments estimate budget, which will also come before this committee as well. So we're going into now the actual numbers, and this is in the outcome of the fourth quarter. And the numbers, when you look on the screen, is a bit small, so I suggest that you do follow on the slides that you've been given. And when we look at this, and I'm orientate you in terms of the table, so on the far left-hand side, you'll see the votes, so that's indeed in terms of the names of the different departments, and its votes, because it also includes the provincial parliament, and its votes in terms of what this House has voted as part of the adjusted budget, which is the next column that you see, the 2018-19 adjusted budget. The columns that follow is in terms of your expenditure outcome per classification. The COE stands for compensation of employees, so that's the cost of the compensation of employees for us for the 18-19 financial year. So of the 63.3 billion almost that we tabled in the adjusted budget, about 33.8 billion of that is for compensation of employees. Goods and services in total is about 13.6 billion rand. Your goods and services consist in terms of your traveling expenditure, expenditure on medicines, expenditure on in terms of the textbooks that education would purchase. In terms of transfers and subsidies that we are making, that's 10.2 billion rand.
the transfers we will be making in terms of for schools, in terms of their norms and standards. We're also making transfers to the municipalities, and also in terms of transfers that we are doing in terms of the public transport operation grant. Then in terms of repayment for capital, that is also part of your infrastructure expenditure, so it's looking at your buildings and machinery and equipment, and that is the value of $5.2 billion. And your payments for financial assets, that is in terms of thefts and losses, and then also debts that is written off through the financial year. The total expenditure therefore comes to $62.9 billion, almost $63 billion, and that constitutes a 99.5% of our budget spend. That is an improvement of last year. In the previous financial year, we spent 99.1% of our budget. So in terms of nominal terms, the underspending therefore amounts to 315 million rand for the end of the 18-19 financial year, and looking at the previous financial year, it was about 527 million rand, so there's an improvement in spend. Also, if you ask where is the improvement in spend, it is on compensation of employees, so that's the next block in terms of the lower part of that slide when you're looking at economic classification. So you see that the underspending on compensation of employees is 109, almost 110 million, and that's where we improved our spending compared to the previous financial year. One of the reasons why we've improved that is in terms of our strategy on fiscal consolidation. And in terms of our fiscal consolidation strategy that we have implemented, it means that the departments, if there are any underspending on COE, then the departments need to submit 80% of that underspending back to the Provincial Revenue Fund, and they're only allowed to request 20% for the allocation. What does that do? It means that it forces the departments to make sure that they put a credible COE budget together during the budget process. And so we're already seeing that there is a return on that in terms of how we have reduced in terms of our underspending. The next slide indicates the data now on the last bullet. It indicates in terms of the 315 million rand, in terms of what that looks like in terms of who has contributed to that underspending of 315 rand. And the order in which I'm going is in terms of nominally, which is the highest underspender, if you follow that logic. So we're looking at human settlements. The underspending is at 89 million rand within human settlements, and there's a reason for that. In the month of March, we received funding from National for the Provincial Emergency Housing Grant, and that was appropriated in March. And because it was appropriated so late in the financial year, and we received it so late in the financial year, the department was not able to spend all the funding, and all the procurement processes could not be completed within that space of time. We received that money for fires in Khayelitsha and Philippi that happened in October in last year. Also, just to say that the rollover of that amount of the 83 million from National has been given to human settlements, so they can continue to spend on that money immediately. In terms of health, the underspending of 56 million is related to a few. Is in terms of firstly about 12 million for the Global Fund, that is our donor funding that we receive in terms of our AIDS program. And there we have delays in terms of filling of posts, and then also there were some outstanding invoices at the end of the financial year that obviously could not be paid. Almost about 16 million in terms of program 8 was in-house, and that is on the infrastructure side within house, and mainly in terms of some of the scheduled maintenance projects that were slower than was anticipated. And then almost about 7 million rand is in terms of the nursing college, when for that financial year, the nursing college was going to transfer to the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. But that agreement did not happen, and therefore the funding did not flow to the University of Technology. And therefore the underspending on that project there. In terms of the Department of the Premier, 46 million, and that relates to compensation of employees, and then also in terms of the machinery and equipment
that was not delivered timely by the supplier, and therefore payments could not be made. In terms of education, the 37 million that you see an underspending there is based mainly on the conditional grant, and that majority of the 37 million, about 25 million of that, is on the education infrastructure grant, and that is mainly in terms of the NISA hostel project that received funding from the national government. And also then to say that all the grant application that we've made to National Treasury has been approved, so education also can continue spending on that money immediately. Social development, 15 million is mainly on compensation of employees, and that is due to internal promotions that leads to savings and compensation of employees, and as well as resignations, which would also then result in savings on COE. In transport and public works, the 14 million rand that is indicated is mainly because of less building condition assessment reports was finalized than they initially planned, which has an impact on further impact on their spending. And then also within public, within transport and public works, they do have a strategy in terms of within the built environment, it is very difficult to get the capacity required. So they have a strategy to provide alternative service delivery mechanisms within the department, and at the same time have a COE strategy to attract the capacity that they require. So what actually happened in the near the end of the financial year is in terms of the recruitment system, the recruitment plans, an outcome was higher than what they planned. So they spent more on COE and then less on capacity than they thought they were going to do, which resulted in the 14 million. So moving on to infrastructure, in terms of human settlements, in terms of human settlements, I already explained in terms of the 96% what has resulted in that spending, and that is in terms of the grant for the fire that we received late, so that impacts in terms of the infrastructure spending. Then also on the environmental affairs and development planning, the 61% spent there is mainly in terms of through the public entity called Cape Nature, receives infrastructure funding, and that is in terms of a project in terms of the Kogelberg Reserve, where we know that there were quite a bit of fires, and that has impacted obviously on the spending in terms of the infrastructure rollout. In terms of public entities now, in terms of the public entities, you'll see that they spend 95% of their budget, and this resulted in an under expenditure of about 36 million rand. And when we look at the detail of that 36 million rand, Cape Nature, the underspending, which is about 16 million, as I indicated, that is the Kogelberg Nature Reserve project due to the recent fires. Moving along to Saldanha Bay Industrial Development Zone, also known as the SBIDZ, the spending performance there in terms of underspending is about 11 million rand, and that 11 million rand is mainly in terms of the Transnet National Ports Authority lease deposit that was not paid at that stage when we were in the end of the financial year. And then also in terms of the expenditure, it includes April rent that needs to be paid in the new financial year, and therefore all the underspending is committed. At this stage, I just need to indicate to the committee that public entities run on a different accounting system than the provincial department. That public entities run on an accrual system. So you would take your in expenditure, what that means is that you would take your expenditure that you need to pay in advance, you would take that as part of your expenditure, your current expenditure, whereas the government is going to do, departments has a modified cash system, so it's only based on cash that you have, and it doesn't take in terms of your future debt into consideration, it just takes your current expenditure into consideration. Then moving along to Cathedra, you'll see that there's a 41 million rand is the adjusted budget, and they have almost like a 5 million rand underspending, and that is mainly on COE. When we look at the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board, there is an underspending of about 3.7 million rand, of which 1.8 million rand is realized because the board relocation took place later than expected, and that resulted in some underspending. We're wrapping up on the finances side now, on the provincial own revenue. The reason why we show the committee the reason for the own revenue, because we're one of the few provinces where we actually budget for own revenue for the different departments. So what that actually means is that departments that can collect revenue, the revenue that they collect, they can actually spend. So it's what we in the province, as part of our fiscal policy strategy, believe that it's to optimize the collection of revenue, but it also incentivizes departments that are revenue generating departments to make sure that they collect as much revenue for themselves as possible. So you ask what kind of revenue does the province then collect? We collect motor vehicle licenses in terms of transport and public works. We collect gambling funds in terms of the provincial treasury, in terms of the gambling board. The Department of Health collects hospital fees, and then also the Department of Community Safety collects in terms of liquor licenses. So the idea is if they optimize that collection of either the tariffs or license fees, it means that they can spend that money that they collect. Alright, so when we look in terms of the outcome therefore on the own receipts, you'll see that we have budgeted to collect as a province about 3 billion rand, which is about 4.3 to 4.5% of our budget. And then what we've actually collected was more than the 3 billion, because we collected 3.5 billion right at the bottom where the total is. And that's about 119% therefore of the budget. In terms of where the overcollection mainly occurred, is in the departments, as I previously mentioned, transport and public works and motor vehicle license fees, and that is mainly due to increasing in tariffs and as well as the increasing motor vehicle population within the province. In the Department of Health, they have increased in the revenue that they receive from hospital patient fees, also in terms of the donor funding they receive from the Global Fund, and also, as I indicated previously on the expenditure side, is in terms of the University of Technology, the transfer that never happened. It was also then resulted in a refund from the university to the Department of Health. Other collection on revenue, the provincial treasury, as I mentioned, is in terms of gambling, and here the over-collection own revenue is on casino taxes, and that's about 554 million rand, and then horse racing taxes contributed about 70 million rand to the collection of the provincial treasury. Yeah, I need to say, I did say that departments are allowed to keep the money that they collect, with the exception of the provincial treasury. We do not keep that funding within the department. That goes back to the fiscus. And other departments get the funding where that's concerned. Department of Education, there was an under collection there in terms of revenue. On human settlements, there is in terms of an over collection, and the over collection is mainly in terms of the agreements that we actually have with municipalities. And it's not only agreements in terms of transfers that we have with municipalities, but it's an agreement that we as a province have on transfers that we make in general. So if we are making a transfer payment to a municipality and they do not spend the funds accordingly, that funding must return to the provincial revenue fund. And so therefore you see the returns as well in terms of the by municipalities for different projects on housing that returns to human settlements, as well as there was a sale of land into the airports company, about 81 million the proceeds were, as part of their revenue. Also to indicate to you, because that does not mean that all this money is laying in the provincial revenue fund for 1890, fund of that money was already appropriated in this new financial year for 1920, that has already been given back to human settlements.
So they're already starting to spend all that money as we speak. So we're moving along now, that's wrapping up in terms of your financial overview, in terms of the provincial treasury, and we're moving on to the Department of the Premier in terms of the spending on the non-financial.
My name is Jacques Barnard, I'm from the Department of the Premier. Our colleague that we represent is not here, so I'll stand in for her. Just to take you through the process of non-financial performance reporting and contextualizing what we mean by that. Right. Performance data is generated from our 13 departments and 10 public entities against set targets within the annual performance plan of each financial year. The performance data is published quarterly. That ensures transparency and accountability on the progress as it relates to service delivery. Non-financial performance monitoring is done using the electronic quarterly performance reporting system. It's a national system that all provincial national departments as well as 3A and 3C public entities must report on, and monitoring across quarterly and annual basis. The quarterly performance report must be signed by the accounting officer after each quarter. In terms of value, the quarterly performance report provides program budget performance data on the progress made against a set performance target as agreed to within the institution's annual performance plan. The quarterly reporting is used as a monitoring tool by line managers, which enables the accounting officers as well as the CEO to make decisions and track progress against plan-based evidence generated. The QPR data, or the quarterly performance reporting data, is also formally reported to the provincial top management, to cabinet and key stakeholders. The quarterly performance reporting data to be used for further application to assess what is working and what is not working. Legislative. On other requirements, we've got compliance to the Treasury regulations, section 5 and 5.3.1, where the accounting officer of the institution must establish procedures for quarterly reporting to the executive authority to facilitate effective performance monitoring, evaluation and corrective actions. It's also legislated by the National Treasury Instruction, Note 33 of 2011, where the instruction outlines the mandatory requirements as set in the framework for strategic and annual performance plans. These guidelines are also applicable, as said earlier, to provincial departments, national departments, 3A and 3C public entities. It excludes 3D public entities. In our province, we've got two, I think it's Casidra and SPINZ. Just to explain the value chain, as indicated earlier, the electronic quarterly performance reporting system on your left-hand side is a system, is a national system used where the performance are reported quarterly in by all 13 departments and the public entities. We obtain or draw information from the system into our provincial system, which is called Risk Performance. It is maintained by the Department of the Premier, and we do the oversight of the performance of these institutions. But from there, we generate various reports, customized reports. There's a brief generated to the cabinet, the HODs and the CEO per quarter, as well as a presentation to this budget committee, and then also publication on the formal website, where the public as well as the provincial audit committees has access to this performance information. Okay, the following slide will provide you with information on the pre-audit performance information for 2018-19 financial year. This now includes performance for the full financial year from the first to the fourth quarter. Again, pre-audited, the Auditor General will now also cast an eye on this performance and confirm these figures. The slide is set up in such a way that it reports on the performance, non-finance performance per cluster, governance, social and economic. It also reports or presents performance in numbers as well as percentages on the right-hand side. You will also note that we have a parcel achieved, an achieved and a not achieved. So for clarity, the achieved will be 100% or more of target achieved. The parcel achieved is 50% or more but less than 100%, and not achieved is below 50%. So these are totals of targets, not the actual target within that indicators. So on observation, the Western Cape government achieved 750 of its indicators, or 84% of the 898 performance indicator targets in total. You will also find that 8 of the departments achieved more than the or equal to the Western Cape government average, which was 84%, and 5 departments achieved less than the average of 84%. 118 targets, or 30%, have been partially achieved, and there are 30 targets, or 30%, that have not been achieved. The next slide also indicates that average we spoke about earlier. It indicates the performance of the departments, and you can see the 85 departments that performed slightly less than the average of 84%. Then on a cluster performance, you'll find that 96% of the government stress cluster achieved the targets. The social clusters departments achieved 82%, and the economic cluster achieved 78%. All departments within the governance cluster achieved more than the Western Cape government average of 84%. 3 departments in the social cluster achieved more than the Western Cape government average, and then 2 departments in the economic cluster. Then on the performance achieved less than the average in the clusters, you'll find that 3 departments within the social cluster achieved less, and then 2 departments within the economic cluster. But that slide of presentations are based on the 4th quarter performance. That's an additional slide we added last financial year. It indicates basically the validated and pre-audit information. So at the end of a quarter, the departments will indicate what the performance totals are at that end of the quarter, and the blue line would indicate after that the validated. That is when they have for the next quarter they get the opportunity to revisit those targets to make sure that and to confirm that those figures are correct. So it's just an indication to make sure that our institutions are in par or in line with the performance that they report. Public entities. Again, that is a pre-audit information for 2018-19 financial year. The layout is exactly the same as for departments. It's set up in clusters, governance, social, economic. It gives indication on the achievement per percentage and per number, and there's also partial achieved and not achieved and achieved. The average for the public entities were 87%, slightly higher than the province, departments for that financial year. You'll see that the public entities achieved 140 or 87% of the total of 161 performance indicators. 8 of the public entities achieved more than the average of 87, and 1 public entity, Casidra, achieved less than 87. The cluster information also indicates that the governance cluster achieved 88%, social cluster 91%, and economic cluster 85%. The public entities achieving more than the Western government average for public entities are listed on the category there. You'll find that Western Cape government gambling relation board within the government's cluster achieved more than the Western Cape government average, 4 entities more than the average, and 3 of the public entities also
achieved more than the average for that cluster.
For the public entities, we also display the validated and pre-audit to give indication on how close they are to the performance reporting. And that's a non-financial performance information presentation.
Practical examples in terms of the in-ear monitoring that I spoke about, Jay, to give the members in terms of a look into the view of the action model.
Okay, thank you so much for the briefing. I'm going to open up the floor now for a round of questions. Then Honourable Murray, then Honourable Zimbi, Honourable McKenzie, Honourable Smith, and then I'll take another round.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and again, thanks for the presentation. I just want to find out on human settlement, on the net underspending, you talked about the 83.7 million. Is appropriated for the Khayelitsha Leoyu, the fund. And the difference of it is normal that the department will have that percentage that it gets there. So with that out, that means the percentage will go up. Okay. Now I want to find out on the transport and public works. You mentioned it was more of the recruitment and the SOE strategy. That was I didn't get it. If maybe you can come back to that to say what was the explanation for that. And the slowly and the anticipated of health. I want to understand when they say the understanding there was slowly than you explained that it was slowly than anticipated for them to, I think it was the issue of the CPUT that we said that they thought that by then it would have been happening, but it didn't happen that way. But another maybe the general question that I want to ask, you know, some of the explanation is like the department was anticipating it's going to happen and it didn't happen. Now, what are the measures in place that they get to put in place to make sure that we don't hear slowly than anticipated the coming financial year, that you get the systems of saying that let's get a different reason for another financial year, rather than getting slowly than anticipated that you had a construction company that said, okay, this is a project I'm going to take and I'm going to spend about 11 months on that project. Then it goes to 14 months and then the reasoning becomes slowly than anticipated. Where are the niche of the problems that you say slowly than anticipated that you don't get it again, that you are going to get the explanation, because it's not like in the weather. It's about the work that has to be put in there in the building that you put the door so you don't put the door in. But the weather is something else that it was not anticipated that you will get the drought, even the drought, I mean, that's the worst example that I need. But you get what I mean. So why do we have reasons like that there's no, to me it's like there's no monitoring to make sure that when you say the project runs for 12 months, it runs for 12 months. And if that is not going to happen, the accountable officer get that in advance to say, here I'm going to end up with a problem that can come to the treasurer and say, here is a problem that I foresee that it might happen. So what are the remedial measures that are going to be in place to make sure that doesn't happen? Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Chair. I'm concerned that the two clusters that perform the worst is health and agriculture. Are the standards which you've set for performance too high, or are the incumbents in those positions not suitably qualified and skilled to perform better? I look at what you've got down here, and I must say that you did quite a good job in compiling, make our job so much easier. But if you look at the performances of these departments, I'm shocked that health and agriculture has performed so bad. Now, why? What would you attribute it to? Did you set to higher standards? Are you going to adjust your standards for performance down? Are you maintaining that same standard for next year? Or what did you think are the reasons that in these, because these are two problematic issues in the province. Our health departments are not functioning optimally. We have problems with lots of complaints. So I would like to know why there is that, because I know there's a big backlog at academic tertiary hospitals in terms of renal renal failure. They can't help the people because it's a long waiting list. They don't have money. But here they show they underspend on their budget. And then the other issue that is much concern is agriculture. At the time we are thinking of training new entrants to the market. Cassidra is not performing. Cassidra is supposed to be there to empower new entrepreneurs, black entrepreneurs coming to the fore, and they haven't spent millions. Money that could have gone to new entrepreneurs. So maybe you can explain to us why percentage of targets not achieved by health is, I know you said it's money we receive from overseas for AIDS programs, but AIDS is a big problem in this country. Five. So you give health a 5% of targets not achieved. Agriculture, 7% of targets not achieved. Transport and public works, 11. When we are unemployment is so high that we are looking at public works to provide work for unskilled labor, even if it's extended public work programs, we expected them to spend the money there, and they underperform by 11% of the targets. That's how I would like to know if you could give me some answers.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's a couple of questions, maybe it's more clarity-seeking questions than anything else, because maybe some of the questions will be better directed to the respective departments. But for purpose of this, it's really just seeking clarity where you can in most instances. My question will be, I think you've been a bit fast for me, so I would like you to just clarify some of the things. The first one is on page 9, the funding there about the human settlement, the issue of Khayelitsha and Philippi. Now, is that 83 million only for those two communities? And then maybe wasn't there a possibility that, so as a result, that means that this emergency housing could not be provided? It was just a bit of a concern to me. And if you look at that money, if you use the normal quantum for a housing unit, it amounted to about 500 of houses of the money that could have been better utilized. So if you can just clarify that for me. Then on page 10, I could not really understand this, the Cape Peninsula University, and I see it also something has to do with the bursary. Did they refuse to do this thing? Or was it maybe, and if they refuse, what might have been the reason really for that? And then I see that you said the Department of Health ended up doing it itself as well. So what might be the implication of that? Then, page 10, really, is, I was confused when I was reading this because I've managed to try and get through it because it was indicated by the chairperson who got it at 5 o'clock yesterday. So maybe you might have answered some of the questions I wanted to ask. If you look at page on education on page 10, now there is a reported understanding of education, but then if you go to page 13, the actual spend of the percentage, actual spend percentage of education is 102, which is overspending. I might be missing something there, maybe, if you can just clarify, or is it basically based on agriculture, or sorry, on infrastructure, because I see the other budget is for infrastructure. I could not understand this one. There's understanding on one, but then when you look at the 102%, that's not understanding if I get my arithmetic profile. So just that, and then if we move to page 14, what dedicate tourism, trade and investment promotion, I see the main budget was 56 million, if I get that correctly, in welcome. Then when you adjusted the budget, it went to 133 million. It might have been something significant that happened there for it to, so it might be good to, that page 14. Yeah, it might be interesting to just read what might be that, what is, because if you look at that, it's, the adjustment is actually more than 100% adjustment of that. So it might have been something significant. Of course, I don't want to labor the point that was raised by Honorable Marae on Cathedra, because it seems to have been the only entity that seems to be underperforming, especially on agriculture. If I gallop now, I'll take it to page 20. On the Department of Education, again, you were moving a little bit fast for me on the under, you say you under-collected the maybe what might have been under collected when you do that. Then my next question is trying to wind up and then I go to page 23. It's more about this I see you are seeing this reporting system. I think it is the software system that is being used for reporting, it's a national one as well. But well, I don't understand. I don't know whether it's just for maybe for self-certification or not, because if I click there and I go to page 27, you've got a number of achieved, number of performance indicators, the target, number that has been achieved, then there's a column of partially achieved. So that means when you partially achieve, you've achieved some, you haven't achieved some. But then I just fail to understand then when you are saying the percentage of tax has not achieved is zero. If there was something that has not been achieved partially, surely the target that has not been achieved can be zero. Unless I get it again, unless the system itself is meant to come with self-glorification. If you say you partially achieved, so that means there's a part you did not achieve. So then when it comes to target, is zero target not or zero target not achieved? Something I don't understand. Might be something wrong with the system there. Something is wrong. Oh, okay. The elder man, Honorable Marae, is assisting me here. I think it might have assisted in clarifying that. I think, yeah. I'm finished. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Mbimbi. You shouldn't be scared to ask questions. This is your and the People's Committee. Honourable Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we'll obviously get to the individual committees to get more detail from them. I just want to get an understanding from the department. So I printed my own presentation and the one they gave, so I've got to make notes on different ones. Can you just assist me quickly? If I remember the human settlements grant when it was during the special period, I think that we did, was it 75 million or 100 million? Can you just give me an indication? Was 75 or 100? 75 million. Okay, thank you. That will assist me to understand this. And when we talk about the 109 million, if one talk about, and I know it's a nice word to use in the current environment, saving. But the reality is those posts are not full. And if you need to provide, and I can understand that we need to find savings, and it's going to get worse given the current situation the country finds itself in. But when you don't fill those posts, it has an impact on, first of all, of somebody working there. If you have one nurse in Mitchell Slane Hospital, four nurses, and you don't fill two of those posts, it becomes a saving on this side, helping the current situation. But the impact on service delivery, two people now have to service 30, 40 people. When you look at all these savings in the various departments, and I don't know how in-depth the discussion was, did you find there was an impact on service delivery? Because the total amount used indicated was under the 9 million in savings. Now some might be due to the delay in filling posts, some posts take 6 months, some take 12 months, they couldn't find the person with the right skills, etc., etc. So that's just a general question across the department. And then when it comes to in-year monitoring, and you get a nice slide there, if one looks at some of, I think Member Maseko asked an earlier question, but if you look at some of the departments, and let's take for example the Department of the Premier, and I serve on that committee, and on page slide number 10, particularly under the Premier, and they talked about the 20-month million rand, which was due to machinery and equipment not being delivered. So when you had an in-year monitoring discussion, whether it was the first year or the sixth, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, sorry, my phone is doing it. When you had that discussion with them, obviously you meet with the HOD as the acting or the budget team, at which point, as far as you can recall, did they indicate that it's unlikely that this is going to happen? Which brings me similar to the point that Member Maseko was making, if you look at the India monitoring. Because obviously this pre-audit was done at the end of the details after March, but because it assists us, and also when you have oversight over the department, you say, listen, you've ordered equipment in Jan, you knew you were not going to, in end of Feb 2019, is it fiscal dumping? Did they order end of Feb 2019 or was it 1st of April 2019? You know what I'm saying? It just helps us if you do oversight over the department. When you did your in-year monitoring or discussions and say, hi guys, stop ordering 5,000 chairs on the 29th of March. And you know that, because it helps me understand, because it said it wasn't timeously delivered. Was it timeously ordered? Let me ask maybe such a question. And then, if you look at the total amount of goods and services, if you look at the underspending of the goods and services, when you have your discussion with the various departments, obviously if you go inter-department, it will be much easier if this department understands by 22 million, this is blah, blah, blah. But if you look at as a provincial government, and this is goods and services, quite a sizable amount. Although it's 0.5% of the total amount, but it's hundreds of millions of rand when it comes to goods and services. When you start budgeting, or budget cycle, or you go to the MTEC or the new cycle for budgeting, do you discuss with the department, listen, this is now the third year in a row, and I don't have the previous years with me to make an informed argument, but just as an observation to say, listen, Department of Education, for the last 3 years you've underspent 20 million rand on training and development. Clearly you are over budgeting. Let's rather allocate that money to the Department of Health, who needs the money better, because you have a much wider view than where I'm currently sitting. Which brings to the point I think Member Mayor made earlier on about people not delivering. Is the targets too high? Are some people putting fat in the budget every year? If you cut 10% in the meantime, they have 20% fat in there. Have you sort of gone into that level of detail when you go into MTech with them? Which brings me to the provincial revenue as well. Sorry, own revenue. And like I said, I don't know the 2017-16 numbers in front of me just to make an accurate comparison. But if I look at transport and public works, when you look at transport and public works, their own revenue collection over the last 2 years, and they've achieved that over what they budgeted for, is that due to either they put the targets low, because we all know that your licensing fees are going to increase next year. I don't think there's any person in the country that doesn't know it. Your vehicle license fee is going to increase next year. So when you budget, of course you have to budget for an increase. But they achieve it over every year, creating the impression that they either they are the world's best performance or somebody's not budgeting accordingly. Which is, you can have a similar argument for a couple of the other departments as well, because they're overachieving. And so there's some... So one needs to understand it in a 3-4 year period, because I'd rather somebody budget more and work towards achieving that than somebody just budgeting below what they actually can achieve, although they achieved based on last year. And then just on the local government also, I mean, the adjusted budget was 56,000 rand, and then there was a 2 million rand achievement. If you look at 2017-18, there's a million rand income. So even the 2018-19, slide number 18, local government, and if you take all the departments, health, social development, the premier department, human settlements, one can understand there was an anomaly. So one can understand there was a sale of an asset of 81 million rand. But even if you take that into account, if you look at 2017-18, they had a 92 million rand. 2018-19 they budgeted 60 million rand. One can understand the 255, but there was 81 million rand sale of land. But the income of the year before doesn't justify why they only budgeted 60 million. Yeah, they overcheated the year before. So somewhere there's a, and this is my perception from looking at this, I don't have those officials in front of me who can explain this out, that you'll be able to. So based on what I'm seeing, there's a general trend of overachieving compared to the year before as well. Like I said, I don't have 4 or 5 years data in front of me, but because it creates the impression that somebody's just moving along, but based on their, well, what they're achieving, they're overachieving. And obviously there's, you know, yeah. So yeah, I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Not supposed to make profits.
The last person in this round, Honourable Smith, and then I will take another round of questions. So Falcon Mitchell and Moran, Kondlo, Wendy, what is your comment in London?
Thank you. Just a perhaps a general question. One, does the provincial treasury department have a appeal body or an appeal person, or is perhaps the MEC in place for you know, MECs are politicians, no? Now you find that money has been allocated to sort senators, for instance, in the local government department. And then a new MEC comes in, and this is an example, new MEC comes in and you reallocate that fund to a different project. Now, is there an appeal body where municipalities can appeal to to get that money back to the original purpose where it was supposed to be. This is just an example to make you understand my question. Does provincial treasury have such a body, or in the MEC, this person who can then overrule the decision or the reallocation of the fund? And then the second one is, the public, provincial public entities. I see that this is done by IDZ in particular that I want to refer to. Now that one, what is your indicators in terms of spending on local and SME? And black, in terms of pro-black businesses in the area, I'm referring to locally. Because there's targets, there's definitely that needs to be met in terms of there's an allocation of a certain percentage that goes to local businesses and so on. So what is the department's indicators to ensure that those things are met at that level? So that's the question. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mitchell.
Chair, I just want to just on page on slide 8 or page 18, I just for interest sake, what under provincial parliament, how does parliament generate the income or an income?
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, bear with us because some of us are still brand new and we still prefer to understand some of the issues. But Chair, just yesterday in the House, the MEC of Health complained about a budget cut of 5%, which amounts to almost 1.3 billion rand. And here we see the underperformance of that particular department. Casida and as a health chair, they claimed that their agricultural support system through their commodities is the best in the country. And they've boasted and bragged about the 62% success rate when it comes to BE or black farmer projects where they are involved, meaning that 38% have failed. Now, if we look at the report here, then one understands why 38% have failed. Based on the underperformance in these reports. Lastly, Chair, I'm looking at page 8 and page 14. And the reporting, when it comes to the different departments and when it comes to the different entities. And when it comes to the entities, you can see, Chair, the first column, the main budget. And I understand it was the initial budget. And then the adjusted budget. And then you can clearly see whether the adjustment was upwards or downwards. Now when it comes to page 8, I'm looking at the, let's say the first column, allocation for 2018-2019, but in that same column the adjusted amount, budget. Now I'm not sure whether the initial amount remains the same, because you can clearly not see whether the adjustment was upwards or downwards, and whether, because it's clear when it comes to page 14, you must applaud some of the departments. Because if you look at the initial budget that they have received and the adjustment, basically some of them have performed more than 100%. If you look at the actual amount that was budgeted at the beginning, right? Because the percentage at the end is basically out of the adjusted budget. Therefore, Chair, you will see that if you look at some of the departments, and we are not quite sure the reasons for the adjustment, some of them, it's a good understand, that those who've been adjusted downwards
have actually performed worse. Because if you take, for instance, the percentage out of that amount, it would have been lower, far less than the 90%. It might have been 70%. Check. So I'm not sure whether the adjustment in this case was to make a specific department look good, because when it comes to service delivery departments, there should be no saving. Because then it means people on the ground are suffering. So check. Cape Nature, 400,000 initially, downwards to 384, and still they fail to spend 100%. And so you can continue, Chair. But as the Honourable on the right-hand side have said, some of the issues you will deal with in the committees, and to see then how we can assist to make sure that self-delivery in black farmers who enter in this market get the lessons of support that they are supposed to get. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Moran, Honourable Kwanzaa, and then after Honourable Kumar, Honourable Philander, and then for the Chief of Honourable Langer's hand, and then I'm going to give the department a chance to answer, and then we'll see how much time we have.
Could I request, there have been several questions and several very good questions and probing questions from members. Could we, through you, permit Treasury to answer these questions just so that we can provide as comprehensive answers as possible and then move on to a second round? Because there's a risk that we start to lose the gist of the questions and that we don't provide comprehensive answers to the committee. Does that be in order?
So, in contrast, is it okay if I wait for the second round to start with your question then?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start and then I'm going to hand over to some of my colleagues to also come in. So there were a number of questions that were asked, but I think let me start with the last question because I think it links to Member McKenzie's question around what do we do in terms of understanding budgets. And when we look at what's happening and the reason why we see adjustments, Parliament has basically got two opportunities to engage with the budget. So when you see that particular spending is not moving in the direction that one would have thought it would, the one opportunity to address that and to redirect it to areas where funding is required would be in the adjustment. What would be in the adjusted budget process, and that's where you would move from a main budget to an adjusted budget. The question that was also raised in terms of the IYM, I think we would need to come back because it's difficult to answer the question whether was it timely ordered. That would be a bit tricky for us to answer, and I think that's a question that member can ask the specific vote. And then just in terms of then the revenue question, so I'm going to start with answering the issue around provincial parliament, the areas in which the different items that parliament can collect revenue from is in terms of sales of goods and services, and that would be promotional and corporate gifts. That would be an item. Also in terms of staff debt repayments and also recovery of previous year's expenditure. So when there's under expenditure, they would then do a rollover, and that rollover will then be recognized. That's basically provincial parliament. And then just in terms of education, that's a bit more, it's an accounting issue. And so I'm going to the under collection that relates to the Department of Education is in terms of also debt write-off. Now writing off debts results in the increase of own revenue, which is a financial transaction, and then also an increase in expenditure, which is theft and losses. And so these are simply accounting entries. There's no real revenue impact, so there's no cash flowing.
So we have noticed that this has been happening for some time, and we could then recognize it because the account, in accounting terms, you are allowed to do so. So we have been encouraging the department to show a reduced number, because when you, at the beginning of the financial year, you project what would be your debt write-off, and if you then don't realize it, then you'll have to. So we are trying to get the department to get to a more credible amount in terms of what they're going to do in terms of debt write-off. Then just in terms of human settlement, that was also a revenue question. In terms of human settlement, in terms of the areas where they would collect, once they receive the grant funding and there's transfers, they would need to gazette those transfers to municipalities. When the delivery does not take place at the rate that is anticipated, and there is potential underspending and there isn't sufficient time to reallocate to a different municipality, it comes back and it's then recognized as revenue. What has happened in the past is that they will usually then request the provincial treasury for a rollover, and that rollover would then specifically go towards the provision of bulk services within municipalities. So that would take, I hope. There was one more, and that was in terms of vote 10, which is the what drives the increase in the motor vehicle in the revenue. So there's obviously the one which is the tariff, which is increased, and the second issue that contributes to the growth is also the growth in the motor vehicle population. And yes, it is conservative, and there is a trend that they that there is under collection. There is a measure of under projection, sort of, or more. Let me not say under projection. Let me rather rephrase it and say it's a bit conservative in terms of anticipating perhaps the number of new vehicles that will come into the system, because then the only thing that they would have at that particular point in time would be the number of current vehicles and what the tariff increase would imply, and that will then indicate what would be the revenue that they would then anticipate to collect. So I hope that takes care of all the revenue questions that were asked. Just in terms of the issues around health, and why do we see the, I think the question was that in terms of the underspending and the example that his member made was in terms of, especially on infrastructure, is it something that we could have foreseen, because we...
What I wanted to find out is there is an infrastructure that is done by Public Works, but there is the other infrastructure that is done by the department itself. And if they are going to allocate the money, let's say they are going to do that for 11 months, don't they foresee that there might be a problem so they can talk to them? That I tend to believe that if it's here on health, that means there's something that they were doing it themselves. The same applies to the donor funding of I think it's for the HIV, the AIDS. They didn't fill the post. That fund is coming, they knew that, usually they talk about that, you know, they are short staffed, but that didn't happen because of filling of the post. So my question is that, why is it happening that way, and then how do you put the measures or give them the advice of how to do it that doesn't happen again, that you stand up as a minister and say, no, the post, we are not sure of the post, but you do have understanding that it has to do with the filling of the post. Just to make sense to me when I do an oversight, that where do we get it wrong to that extent?
So in the model that Annelise was going to show also right at the end, in terms of how the IYM would work, there's a portion that we're asking departments in the beginning in terms of section 40 of the BFMA, subsection 4, to give us a cash flow projection. So in terms of that cash flow projection, they would then anticipate how they're going to spend over time. And that happens for all items that they can spend on. And at times that cash flow projection in itself, there could be other things happening during the course of the month, which would cause them not to meet that target, and that's why we will see the fluctuations between what was anticipated and then what then actually transpired. And so the idea is that they then adjust that, and we do allow them in terms of the model to adjust it, but some of the things we still see that there is a difference between what they expected to have spend it on and what they have actually been able to actually spend on. Also, there could be lag times in terms of the time that for compensation it would be different, but for all other items where they would have to provide or procure services. They might have procured the services, there could be a delay in terms of the invoices received, the invoices captured, and the cash actually being expanded. So there's a number of reasons why one would see those particular patterns. I'm sure Annelies will provide a little bit more detail on that. Just in terms of the issue around the adjusted, the human settlement additional amount that we've received. Just to assure the committee that we received the Gazette, the signed Gazette very late. So we tabled the additional adjusted budget on the same day that we tabled the main budget for the current financial year. So it was in March, it was around about the 5th of March. And obviously with the financial year ending on the 31st, it left them with very little time to actually expand on that. So that is why but they managed to commit the funding. So if they can show a commitment, then the funding then gets rolled over to the following financial year. And yes, the money was specifically for Khayelitsha and Pilapi.
I'm going to continue on the human settlement fund in terms of that answer. So I think in terms of what the member across me has asked in terms of the human settlement is in terms of, yes, we received the, okay, let me just actually go back in terms of the history. So in October we had fires in Khayelitsha and in Pilapi. As part of the human settlement development grant, we can actually apply to national to assist us for emergency housing for those areas. So what happens from national is the fact that they will give us approval, but we can only use it in those areas. So the department does not have the option to use the grant funding in other areas, unfortunately, because in terms of it comes with those conditions. So I think that answers some of the questions. One question was asked. So we had the fire in October. We then applied for the emergency funding. We received it then in the month of March. Also in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, unfortunately, we cannot spend unless we have appropriated that fund. So we have to wait for appropriation. As the HSC indicated, was on the 1st of March. And from there, the procurement processes then kicked in after the 5th of March. And therefore, and I want to say in general, because of the advice we would give as provincial treasury, that's one of the things that we do in the month of January to February, essentially is in terms of looking at, in terms of where we are projecting the department is going to spend and where they say they're going to do. And we start looking in terms of where there are alternative spending that can happen. But in the human settlement, as I said, it's a national conditional grant. We can only spend it, and the condition was in those areas. So that's the explanation. Then I think the next one was in terms of the nursing college, in terms of the Cape Peninsula funeral. All right, so for the year of, it's so far, so it's 18-19 right now, so that financial year, right? 18-19 financial year. What needed to happen in that financial year, we do have a nursing college. So the infrastructure in terms of a nursing college.
training of nurses happens at the university, so technically it is their students. So what actually happened is, in terms of, there was an agreement in between the two institutions that nursing college would then transfer to the training institute, if I could put it that way. But obviously there would be operational budgets in health budget that would need to pay for the upkeeping and the operational of the nursing college. So what happened is that agreement in terms of the transfer never happened. And so what is in terms of, so the expenditure that they thought that they were going to give to in the end would become part of the university never happened. And so that is one of the, and as far as I know, at the end of this financial year as well, that agreement hasn't been finalized. And the department needs to make a decision of whether they are going to hold on to the college or not. So that is some of a question that could be to put the Department of Health in terms of what is the finalization of the nursing college transfer regarding that. Then in terms of just the overall question, I think there was an overall question about remedial steps and anticipation and so on. So there's a few things. As I said, in terms of January and March, that's what we are doing in terms of the financial strategy. We are identifying where we think there's going to be underspending, and we're asking the relevant questions to the departments in terms of why. You ask with the provincial treasury, and this is the reality, is in terms of when we are making plans, we are making certain assumptions. And it, as life is, it's not always going to pan out the way we plan. But what we are asking the departments in terms of what remedial steps as part of the project planning are they taking into account, and where the flags come up for us if it's the same project over and over, and where they are not learning from one project to the another project. And if that is not happening, we put that as an opportunity for redirecting of funds when we have a conversation with them. So that is the kind of conversations that happen with that concern. The kind of check for the peer, I think I've answered. In terms of the very good question on the main budget, and Jolinda also touched on it, but in terms of what the gentleman was saying, is why you see the adjusted budget but you don't see the main budget, and you're quite right. So from my side, I'm going to apologize to you that you do not see the main budget. I do have the numbers for you in terms of what the main budget is, if you would like to see it afterwards. But the main, it was just a practical reason why I did not include it, is because there wasn't space in the slide. And I actually had to make a call on what I wanted to show you, and that's the only reason. There's nothing in terms of hiding, in terms of trying to make departments look good. That is not why the provincial treasury is here. We're here to give you the numbers, and we will always do so. So that's the only reason why it was excluded. Regarding that. Then in terms of the very good observation on the health side, in terms of the infrastructure, my colleague on infrastructure will handle, and then I need to ask my people next to me, am I missing anything? Or I can come back?
Westgrow.
Oh, yes, on Westgrow. So the Westgrow, in terms of what we are showing there, as you said, the adjusted budget was in terms of, the main budget was in terms of 56 million, and then that increased. I do not have the details for you in terms of why it increased, but what I can assure you is the fact that the Westgrow did not get the funding, the increase in funding from the provincial government. So public entities, so perhaps this is the place where I need to say, in terms of public entities, they can receive money beyond the government's input. And so they would have in terms of a list in terms of where they got additional funding, but it did not come from the provincial government in terms of the numbers.
So why were you featuring
Sorry, Honourable Maria, if you could just allow Treasury to just finish all the questions and we're going to take another round, and we're starting the second round with Honourable Kodlo, as I remember.
Thank you, Chair. Let me address one or two issues on the infrastructure side. Just to say, first of all, to get the 98% infrastructure spending is a very good performance. We always we strive for 100%, but we live in a real world. And just to highlight a couple of issues in the real world, which in particular in the past year was impacted negatively on the performance. The construction industry is in a very terrible place. You would have seen from the newspaper and so forth a number of them, even the big contractors went belly up, including the group fires and battle beams and all kinds of dire strikes. And that impacted because we obviously contracting with them in terms of our procurement processes, and it impacted a number of projects. So the departments in the end, I think, actually done really well in terms of mitigating some of these. I mean, the one good example for those coming in the more rural areas, the Montague Aston Bridge and Road upgrade. I mean, the contractor it's a major contractor, the biggest item on our infrastructure site. And to get a new contractor on site, to go through the negotiations processes, to make a call on terminating and going into a new round of appointing another contractor, that takes time, unfortunately. Then obviously, well, the weather is not indicated, sometimes weather does play a role. Disasters, we unfortunately, part of the climate change was probably, the one year you've got fires, the next year you've got floods. The Nice Now Hospital in particular, this is referred to, I mean, the high school was damaged by a fire disaster as part of the Nice Now fires. The Kugelberg underspinning as well is also part of the fires that we faced in the past year, or sometimes even previous year, because it takes time to get to attend to these things. So there are a number of factors, and a number of factors that influence sometimes is community unrest. And to resolve all of that takes quite a bit of effort in some cases and energy from the department side. So overall, I think at 98% we've done very well. Obviously, 100% is what we strive for. In terms of the education, underspending and overspending, we have to account separately for the conditional grant. So again, it's back to the Nice Now Hospital. So that's just, we have to account specifically for that. And that 19.5 million more or less was underspending, and that's been committed and will be spent as underneath indicated in the current financial year. Already been a grant approval for that. And then on the overspending, departments are allowed in terms of the PFMA to make use of if there's underspending in other areas, especially then they might spend more on capital. So they might incur more capital. So they did spend on the equitable share part. They did spend more, but they underspend it on the conditional grant specifically for the Nice Now Hospital. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, so I'm going to just in terms of the members of the bank asked about in terms of just in general about revenue and over time. I think there was the one. And then also on the COE, in terms of the 109, does that mean and how do we address that going forward? Alright, so from a revenue perspective, and I mentioned this in terms of at the beginning, in terms of we're one of the only provinces as part of our fiscal policy strategy is in terms of the revenue that the departments, in most cases, except the provincial treasury, when they are collecting their funding, we do budget for expenditure so they can spend it immediately. Now, with that comes a risk. And the risk is that your expenditure must equal your revenue. So as soon as you do not collect all your revenue, it means you must underspend. You must underspend on the expenditure side. So what that actually means is that, yes, there is a bit of conservatism that is built into the entire model, so that departments must be assured that they will collect that funding, because if they don't collect that funding, they must underspend by that same amount of money. And that is a risk that I think no accounting officer would want to take, because that means that service delivery would just cannot happen under any circumstances. So that's the if I can say, the mechanics around the policy that does impact. But then you do, from the other side, you say, but then is it the correct policy? The point is that, well, we have 4.3% of our budget that we didn't have before. So we have to weigh it around those kind of discussions. On the 109 million rand,
Now, I agree with you on 109 million rand. That has an impact. We need to check in terms of whether that has an impact in terms of service delivery, in terms of people were not employed, and then also in terms of just in terms of the total lag time for the province in terms of filling of posts, and that results in an underspending. So I think part of the COE issue for us as a province, what we first tried to do is in terms of make sure we're not increasing COE, so that we are stabilizing and we are making sure we're becoming as efficient as possible. So when I said in terms of previous spending, in terms of our underspending previously was around 300 million on COE in the previous financial year. So, and that's where the 110 now becomes the perspective from that. So you ask then, if we have them stabilized and made sure that we're as efficient as possible, what now do we do around the 109? And that is now looking in terms of service delivery. And we have analyzed those numbers. So, in terms of that 109 million rand, at least 40 million of that is within the Department of Health. But there's a reason for it. It's not that nurses were not employed. That in terms of the 18-19 agreement as part of the sector, that they, in terms of capacitation and also in capacitation for the NHI project, that as a sector, there's an indirect grant that provinces would receive in terms of capacitation. Now, what happened, quite frankly, in terms of the end of the financial year, we were supposed to get about that 40 million rand as an indirect grant, meaning we employ staff and we put a claim into national and they will pay. Unfortunately, they only paid in the month of March. So they only gave us the money in the month of March. So, but we are employing people based on the claims, and therefore we used in terms of our own funding in the meantime. But when the funding came in March, it made a saving of 40 million in health. So it's not that the people were not employed within health. And then you'll see that the other funding is about 20 million that I also mentioned in transport and public works. But that is the further work now that we need to do. And you're quite right. We are to a certain degree, we are quite lean as a province on COE. We now at that balance in terms of we now need to look at impact on service delivery and where we service delivery needs to increase. There needs to be concomitant increase in COE. Going forward. So I think that answers the COP in general question, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Before there was the one question in terms of the appeal body. As such, the provincial treasury does not have what we would call an appeal body, but in terms of access to information, anybody can approach either the executive or the accounting officer in terms of requiring more information, but there is no appeal body as such.
Chair, maybe just in response to the non-financial performance. I think when we look at the summary draft or illustration that we made, it's important to note that we do not report on the details of each target, but it gets converted into a percentage. That said, it's also important to note the performance categories that we explained earlier. So when you see a 5 as a number not achieved, it doesn't mean it's a 0. It means that they are under a 50% performance. They're not a 0. But the same with a partial. If an institution performs at 99%, it will be unfair to just give them a 0 or a non-performance. And that is why the past achievement category was placed there. So the three categories are not achieved, partially achieved, and achieved above 100%. It's important that you look at these stats. The institutions also have the opportunity within the system to note why they have underperformed in some of the targets or not achieved above partial or 100%. Health department, for example, in summary, had dependencies on stakeholders. They had delayed projects. They also had expenditure that exceeded in the fourth quarter that's basically public interest funding that moved over to the next financial year. So those were their notes for health department on the underachievement of their 5% that they didn't achieve. And again, the 5% that is not achieved doesn't mean they are not a zero as a target. They could have just been under the 50%. The Department of Public Transport Public Works, they also had some supply chain challenges and also contractor performance that they're monitoring. And Department of Agriculture, procurement challenges, persistent drought had a problem with some of the targets. And in many cases in all of these institutions, demand-driven indicators. And demand-driven indicators makes it extremely difficult to set a target and achieve them. So those are the majority of notes that has been made by the institutions of not achieving that full 100%. Casida, they had older projects not yet completed, so they're in the completion phase. Maybe not in that financial year, but most probably in this financial year. Again, demand-driven targets, less interest in training, for example, than they expected, and also no funding received for certain projects that caused, unfortunately, targets that were not met. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I'm going to take the following hands in the following order. Nkondo, Shinanda, Winger, Marie, and then I know Honourable McKenzie has a follow-up question to follow the gentleman that I never got your surname.
No,
the other one. Jock.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. So, first of the group of the ones who do four hands, and then we can do the follow-up question from Honourable McKenzie.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I just have two questions first on the budget process, which was the first presentation made. I see on the first, I think the slide number two, if maybe colleagues can just explain to me, I see in September there's something called joint public participation. If you can just indicate for me what that is and the nature thereof as part of the budget process. The second one is that considering, you know, the entire integrated approach for planning and budgeting as articulated in slide 3, I'm interested to know what is the tools that the provincial government uses to actually ensure integration of both the national and local government, given that you are the sphere in the middle. And I'm asking this because obviously there are concurrent functions, there are particular national priorities. Yes, we see them in documents as they are represented, you know, as part of the overview. But it's very difficult in terms of data-wise to see how, that's why I'm asking, what is the tool that is there to ensure integration of both national and also municipalities as part of this puzzle? And if you do have that particular tool, who actually provides opinion almost every, in terms of at any given point in time of performance audit or performance reporting, who gives opinion at the level of that integration, whether it is there, whether it is minimal, you know, who makes the value judgment in that? And how does we as the House, how do we access that particular information and obviously data that actually sort of verifies the information itself? Then on the pre-audited information, okay. One, I want to understand. You see, one of my difficulties, and perhaps it's just a comment, Chair, and maybe the Minister, because he's here as an accounting authority, maybe give an opinion on this. You know, my difficulty is that, as you were explaining, that we are talking about three financial years in context. But obviously there's also
a particular reality of this particular financial year we're talking about now, that it's against a 5-year period based on the election. So we're in a new administration. So how do we deal with an assessment of an administration context? You see, so that it helps us to learn lessons of the 5 years and the implementation from a budgeting point of view, because obviously from the manifesto there were things that were supposed to have been delivered. As we start a new financial year, you know, in the new administration, that's why I'm saying perhaps the minister can give an opinion in that. It's just my difficulty. At what point is there any of such an exercise, you know, that will help a person to look, yes, in these 3 years, but in context to understand the full performance, you know, of this government. Having said that, Chair, that's why I said it's a comment, and perhaps somebody can be able to help me in that particular challenge. A few questions or clarities. Perhaps I would request from the department to just get the National Treasury framework on rollovers. So that I think for me would help, so that one gets to understand obviously what are the parameters of this particular rollovers, because I understand that there are particular conditions, you know, so that you avoid people not doing what they are supposed to do, because while we plan to deliver. We don't plan to actually, you know, get things to be rolled over. So I'm interested in that, so that the specific cases you are referring to here of rollover, one can be able to understand them in context of those particular parameters. So perhaps that could be shared, because most of them obviously relate to specific departments that one will have to follow on. The second one is to check, given the legal dispute specifically that relates to the Department of Agriculture with CASIDRA, reporting. Now, as we deal with this pre-audit, how are we going to deal with this particular issue now that, you know, we're sitting on this matter not being resolved? So are we still, as a province, including that particular department, going to still be reporting in accordance to the same, you know, issue that has brought, because my understanding was that it was interpretation of a particular reporting requirement. So I'm asking that because obviously if one were to look at that, we are then foreseeing the same sort of audit opinion on that particular matter. So if one can just be given guidance, what are we going to be seeing now that this matter, at this point we were sitting, it is still not resolved. And then again, now one, you spoke about the revenue collected and that is 4.3%. Is there a particular a guideline on the revenue collection itself, maybe from itself as the provincial treasury? In particular, because I actually saw in one, I think it was the Department of Education, if I'm not mistaken, where you say they've under-collected. Because then one would have been interested, or one would assume that obviously there is a specific target, and I think that has been, there is an indication to that effect, that how much a department may be able to collect in a particular year. So that when you say they've actually collected this amount, it's against a particular benchmark that was placed. So I'm asking, is there that particular framework? And if it is, obviously one would be interested to just understand, so that one is empowered on how the whole revenue collection, you know, happens, including writing off of debt, you know. That is why I'm saying if it is in that guideline and one can be able to spare us that, I would be interested. And who authorizes the writing off of debt? Is it the accounting officer or the accounting authority who actually authorizes that? My last one, I think, is on slide 31. And indeed, is just to try and understand your craft, what it means to a lay person like myself. If I look at the count, the yellow to serve the account of Q4 targets. Now, I'm not sure whether I'm reading this graph correctly. And let's use the Department of Agriculture as an example. Because between the prelim achieved, the validated achieved, then there's 130 in terms of the site. What does it mean? Does it mean the department, this was what was targeted in terms of performance, and they are not yet there in terms of the prelim? If you can just give me to understand what, how this graph that you're presenting here, you know, how does one actually read the graph itself? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for the two questions.
Thank you, Chair Lady. It is Women's Month after all. I've been partially covered by the response to Member McKenzie and to Member Maseko, because my question was going to be on the underspending and the compensation on the compensation of staff, and that touches to the hard bodies, the warm bodies as well, and the filling of vacancies and so forth, and also the reduction in that underspending by ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Sinanja, Honourable Winger, and then our last will be Mr. McKenzie. Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to understand where, I suppose they're entities, but not in the legal definition of a public entity. So things that are independent of government, for example, prisoners or the police ombudsman, and seems to be the children's commissioner. They're not entities per se, but they do receive government funding, and they do have APPs, and they do have targets. Where are they contemplated? Are they contemplated within the department and reflected there, or are they reflected elsewhere?
Thank you, Honourable Wenger. Honourable Murray.
Thank you, Chair. Person. I'm intrigued by the fact that we have collected so much more money at hospitals and for health services, and I don't see what are you going to do with this over-collection. You budget X, you get X plus Y plus Z. To what extent can this influence your indigent policy towards those who can't pay? Because obviously you're over-collecting. And if you're over-collecting, it means that people pay more for health services, and we know there's such high unemployment in the Western Cape. Although it's less than other provinces, it's still relatively high. Would this influence policy? Maybe the minister is best to say that. Could this downscale what patients have to pay at hospitals in terms of indigent policies? Also, the second question, when we originally okayed Grand West Casino and also the casino in cabinet, at the time I was member of this cabinet, we negotiated with the government that the casino licenses of that money will be used to finance poverty eradication projects in the Western Cape. I was at the time Minister of Social Services, and they added to that poverty alleviation. Now I see there's over 500 million rand that's coming in casino money. And if I heard you wrongly, correct me. Are you saying that revenue goes to national? And that we have no say, what happens to the revenue? Because if I go to Grand West, it's the poor who gamble, because they hope to win some money. It's their money and their sweat that's lying there. And if there's any profits to be made from gambling, I believe it should be pumped back into the poor areas and poverty relief. So I just would like to know, would you consider budgeting here in your budget for a program called Poverty and Alleviation, and that underspending and over-collections of that fund could be channeled towards alleviating poverty in this province. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Moore. Last question from Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Barnard. I think Mr. Barnard here. Earlier on when he indicated about procurement challenges, and I know that his colleague next to him gave specific examples of the construction industry, etc. Because he mentioned three departments. When one looks at, if it's one department, then the way it's explanation earlier on, you can understand. But on your experience, when you talk about procurement challenges in you mentioned three departments or one or two entities, because that's across one department, see, what particularly were there, or what procurement challenges did you pick up because you wasn't specific, or did those departments not give you specific procurement challenges? Like I said, your colleague talked about the construction industry, particularly we talk about health and transport and public, so one can understand that what could be the natural disaster, etc. But when you mentioned, you didn't give specifics. So I'm just keen to know, what were the specific procurement challenges those departments in the one entity you mentioned had experienced? Thank you.
Before the department, I just have a few from my side. It was indicated previously that the budget in the future is going to be reduced by National Treasury by 5% and so on, coming the next few years. And I just wanted to find out the reasons from National Treasury side for the reduction of our government's budget in the future, and how are we going to try and mitigate that service delivery to be impacted by that reduction. And secondly, in terms of the electronic monitoring systems for evaluation and so on, what are the tools that you use in that system to determine the answers or the outcomes? So for example, if you have to deliver 10 chairs, what factors do you take into account in that monitoring system to make sure that someone has delivered 10 chairs? And then in terms of slide 8 of the pre-audit slide, at the bottom of the numbers, it speaks about the payment for financial assets. It's part of the economic classification. And there was a 202% spending as percentage of budget. I'm not too sure if you've already spoken to that, but if you could perhaps just give us a bit of context there. And then finally, if I'm not sure whether we all truly understand how grant allocations, for example, so maybe just a short explanation to the committee members on when we receive grant funding from national, that with the conditions that are attached, and how that process works when money comes to province, and how province spends the particular grant funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Just before the department responds, there were some questions directed to me. The Honourable Member asked about how we would, or how the Parliament would assess or provide oversight of the previous term. I'm advised that the Department of the Premier does conduct both a mid-term and end-of-term review of the Provincial Strategic Plan, and presumably the Honourable Member could be briefed on the outcome of those two reviews in the relevant committee in this Parliament. Then the Honourable Murray asked a question about health policy, whether over-collections might lead to a review of the charges, presumably, in the health domain. That is a sort of a fairly a health policy question, so I would prefer to defer the answer either to my department, or if they're not sufficiently familiar with that terrain, obviously the Honourable Member could pursue that in the relevant committee. There's then a further question from the Honourable Chairperson about proposed budget cuts. Yes, you're absolutely correct. National Treasury have issued the medium-term expenditure framework guidelines, and they have asked provincial treasuries across the country to prepare scenarios where we anticipate, or where they anticipate, budget cuts of 5, 6 and 7% over the medium term. And our strategy is obviously to oppose those budget cuts, and we are in the process of preparing submissions for which we intend to submit to National Treasury. And of course, we would be happy to brief the committee on those submissions when they are completed.
Thank you, Chair. To start in terms of the casino taxes, just to give the members some assurance that the casino taxes that we collecting get paid into the provincial revenue fund. So it stays within the province. And if one would look at Roman number 2 in terms of the book that the estimates of provincial revenue expenditure, the member will see that in terms of the provincial receipts, what we have received from national, because it makes a distinction between what we've received from national and what is our own financing that we've put in under that, in terms of the provincial revenue fund, the provincial revenue fund added 622 million rand to that. And that's the money that we take then from the provincial revenue fund, and the gambling taxes then went into the fund. So it does get distributed back to the department, and because the Western Cape government prioritizes spending on the social sector, which accounts for the bulk of the way the funding is being spent. The bulk of the 622 million found its way within specifically education.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to ask the rest of the team just in terms of to respond to the issues around the joint public participation. Sally is going to deal with that. The reform process in terms of the integration between local government and provincial government, between her and Ronald, how then do we bring national government in, and what we've tried in terms of some of the infrastructure publications that we have started with last year, and how we then bring in national government in terms of that specific process. Thank you. And then the grant funding.
So in terms of the joint public participation, the integrated cycle that I spoke to essentially captures all the engagements and interventions that cut across the Department of the Premier, the Department of Local Government, and the Provincial Strategy. So with regards to the joint public participation, this essentially captures the Department of Local Government's role in joint public participation, and there's a full sub-program within the Department of Local Government that is responsible for public participation, and essentially their purpose is to enhance the community participation and delivery at the local level. So that specifically relates to DLG's role in that regard.
So there was a specific question with regards to the tools that we use to ensure integration. Now, integrated management is not a tool, a hard tool. It's an approach that you use to co-plan, co-budget, and co-implement. In a time where our economic and fiscal environment is really not at the state where we require it to be, resources from the various spheres within government, all three governments, we need to find a mechanism to start integrating and planning our spatial focuses to deliver our services in such a way where we can leverage from each other. So that's what integrated management as an approach actually is. So there's no specific tool that I can give you, a member, that will address, that will show you, give an opinion or like performance reporting on integration. Integration as an approach is not necessarily measured, but it is something that we are pointing, and what we use in terms of our integrated planning, budgeting, policy and implementation cycle by means of all of our engagements that we enforce on the departments within the Western Cape government, when we plan with our municipalities as well. And then there's also a number of forums at national that we also attend, for example, sector budgeting, as well as functional groups for the various sectors. So when you spoke about that tool specifically, it's not like an IYM tool that was discussed earlier when Annelies was doing that part of the presentation. I don't know if you have a follow-up.
Can I follow up, Chair?
Can I follow up?
Quick, okay.
Yeah. So this approach you are talking about without a tool, how would you then prove that you're talking about integrated planning? So how would you prove that indeed and somebody is able to have evidence that you have integrated?
Okay. What we have done, because we have a joint working relationship in terms of a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Local Government, so when we jointly do the local government LGM tech process and we jointly do the provincial government MTech process. So from the what we are taking from the local government MTech process is some of the or all of the main themes coming from local government, and that then gets incorporated in how then in the discussions that we have with provincial government. So in that way we make sure that there is an alignment between what local government itself is recognizing as needs that they would require the province to assist or jointly respond to between ourselves and them. And then we then take what we get from the local government MTech, and as a treasury we will then have to ensure that in our provincial MTech we ensure that departments actually give effect to those. It's a reform process, and I think for this year actually we are going to have to relook at our MTech, how we approach our provincial MTech to ensure that we take those into consideration, properly into consideration.
Thank you so much, and thank you to the Department of Treasury. Mr. Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. With response to the non-financial, it's a pity we can't put that slide on. I'm not sure where that little device is. I think it's important just to show again that slide on the screen. Underneath this one. Yeah. That curve. Okay. Just to this is a very important slide because every quarter we will present the same slide. So it's important that we understand it fully when we report on a quarter's performance. This is now, the reporting we did now is for a whole financial year. Next time we meet will be for a quarter. So in that case, we will report on the preliminary performance of the institutions for that quarter that has passed. So there's a preliminary reporting and there's a validated reporting. The preliminary happens immediately after the end of a quarter that we can report the preliminary performance. That is their status at that time at the end of the quarter. But because the sort of regional offices and other data sources must still provide input to the performance, there is a lenience that with the next quarter, you then report on that quarter's validated to confirm that total. So that's the difference between the prelim and the validated. The yellow line there is the target that has been set, or the number of targets set for that institution. In the agricultural space, it's 130 targets that were set to be met. The preliminary at the quarter end was 109. Now you'd expect it to go up, but it actually dropped one to 108. So we would have reported to you that it achieved 109, but if you can look at the preliminary at the validated, you then get the confirmed amount. That is why we always include a slide like this to look back at the previous quarter to confirm that preliminary performance. Is that understandable? It's probably a bit confusing, but I hope that clarifies it or not. Okay.
So the chairperson, that wasn't the question.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Zenit Ishmael, Strategic Management Information. My apology, I first went to Moscow and that's the reason why I was late. Okay. So in terms of the question, in terms of the procurement and the kind of the details of the, also in terms of procurement, most of the reasons given during deviations relate to the project management approaches and the depth of what's happening within a project management life cycle during construction phase or during the building design or the construction of a building or infrastructure or classrooms that's being renovated and so forth in terms of the education space or in the health facility in terms of health. So just broadly, project management of constructions, the timing of the when the labors are appointed, the budget allocation in terms of, example, kickoff budget in terms of what's happening in a project. You know, also the procurement approach of a particular department, and very much within a project, the specialized nature of the work. So, and then sign off of approval or completion of a project. And then sometimes it is also delayed in procurement because too few tenders have been received. And then it is a revisiting of that whole tender process. In terms of then there is reasons which have been unexpected, such as unrest, drought and so forth, and also knock-on effect of appointment of the professional service providers. So all slow progress in design, and then that happens, and then ultimately it's about in your plan performance against your actual performance. You know, so it is very much in a program and in a project management life cycle, it is in time and cost. What you have planned is according to time, what you have actually achieved according to time. What you have planned in terms of spend in relation to what you have actually spent. And that has been also a knock-on effect in terms of your achievement in terms of that particular life span of that project. So those are basically kind of in a nutshell reasons given by departments. But each individual department, as Mr. Barney said earlier, for each and every performance indicator, where there is a deviation, the department provides a narrative to that. Okay, thanks.
And maybe the last slide to the minister.
Thank you, Chair. Do I conclude that we're done? Thank you. Well, thank you to the members of the committee for your excellent questions. Chair, we take note of the point you made and the point that other members made about late submission. The head official will deal with that. I'd also like to point out to the honourable member that in fact we presented only 41 of the 51 pages, which by my calculation is 80% achieved, and we'll do better next time. Then I also have to say I'm very disappointed to hear the response to that honourable member's question, and which is that I don't have arbitrary powers to shift funds between budgets. Very disappointing, but that is the constitution that we have. Thank you.
Thank you so much to the Minister and the Department. We'll be seeing a lot of you. And we'll have a lot of questions in the future, I'm sure. Also, we're going to take a quick break of 15 minutes because we still have to... Remember, the meeting's until 4 o'clock. See your diaries. Quick break, and then we need to adopt minutes as well as the previous quarterly report. And then if the committee has any particular resolutions or actions, I can't really say, but if the committee then has any resolutions or actions, we will deal with it at the end and then we'll come.
Chair, sorry, there seems to be a general view that we can continue.
Do you want to continue? I just want to give people a comfort break and...
A break.
Okay, I'll shorten the break to 10 minutes then. Okay. Thank you.
They get the feed in from the various departments before they compile their budgets. So it's not for him to say whether the Minister of Health or the Minister of the Government or the Minister of Public Works should reduce or up his budget. He's just got to hold this side function.
Yeah, but I think the question was, does he know the reason for it? And I don't think he gave a reason, did he?
No, I can't recall him giving a reason for that.
I'm going to be asking the very end, and it would be fascinating to hear why, because I think that that's quite substantial.
Yeah, I'm going to leave now.
I'm coming down.
But I'm sure that the guys can ask that question.
Thank you, Mr. Burke.
Yeah,
good
to
meet you, sir.
Nice working with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'll stay in the middle of the committee. No, I mean, I'm not also, I just stay in the committee.
Oh, okay.
I'm chairman of agriculture. I'm chairman student. I serve on culture and affairs. And then I serve on sports committee because the split of committee, agriculture, culture, sport, was one committee.
All
split into three. Okay. And otherwise, suppose they were on the bank for giving.
Okay.
But then I see most of the meetings because although I can give my impact, I don't have a vote in the committee. But that is where they influence decisions.
Yes, that's true.
See, because sometimes, although you can't vote, you influence the guy you can.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm trying to say
that that is a whole lot of work, and that is what it is.
He does, but I'm used to it. I've been premier of this province. I've been mayor of the city of Cape Town. I've been minister for 12 years in
Parliament. Wow.
So, it's nothing.
Well, you know, you've got me.
Yeah, I started in 2004, and I was 50 years at home enjoying my life, and then they asked me to come back, so I still got one.
this morning. I think it came from the African Leadership Academy.
Okay. I think it's from PNG.
No.
Okay. Let's ring the bell.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
so
it's the last time it was broken.
Like this.
Okay, can we please go through the draft quarterly report? Okay, so this report, April to June 2019, page 1, objectives of the budget committee, any corrections? Page 2, objectives continued, departments reporting to the committee, entities reporting to the committee, chairperson's overview, number of committees held, any correction? Page 3, number of committee meetings held continue, table of members' attendance continued, any corrections? Page 4, members' attendance continue, meetings postponed, NCOP and provincial legislation, legislation finalized, legislation not finalized, invitation of committees, invitation of chairpersons, any corrections? Okay. Invitations of chairpersons continue, workshops, budget of the committee, following documents are attached, designations, any corrections? Okay. Next page is blank, and then the next page is the budget. Any corrections? Okay. Next page is blank.
Okay.
If there's a proposal for the draft quarterly, Honourable Philander, Honourable McKenzie,
yep.
Second. Thank you so much. At the end, you will find the program coming up. As you'll notice, majority of them are statutory meetings. I will move on to resolutions and actions of the committee before I open up to the floor. I have two resolutions I would like to put personally to the committee, and then I'll open up to the floor as well. The first one is a general one. I noticed today that because our committee starts at 1 o'clock, that it falls within the mosque time. Both our procedural officer and one of our members of the committee are of the Muslim faith. And I would like to propose that if the budget committee sits on a morning on a Friday, that we end by 12 o'clock, we make the suggestion to programming so that members of the Muslim faith are able to go to the mosque. If we are in the afternoon, I would like to propose that we start at 2 o'clock so that members of the Muslim faith have enough time to conclude their prayers and be able to come to the meeting itself. Okay, proposal, Honourable Philander. Honourable McKenzie seconds. Thank you so much. It's the resolution of the committee. The second resolution I have is more formal. Can but see if I can just hand this out to everyone. Or, thank you. I'll get to that now. So while the documentation has been handed out to everyone, I'll read the resolution so long, and then I'll just give you a little bit short, brief context as well. So the resolution reads as follows. On the matter of a provincial money bill amendment procedure bill, or the matter, noting section 104 of the Constitution 1996 or the Constitution that the quote legislative authority of a province is vested in its provincial legislature and confers on the provincial legislature the power B to pass legislation for its province quote close. 2. Noting section 114(1) of the Constitution that quote in exercising its legislative power a provincial legislature may A. consider, pass, amend, or reject any bill before the legislature, quote, close. 3. Noting section 123(3) of the Constitution that, quote, a provincial act must provide a procedure by which the province's legislature may amend a money bill, quote, close. 4. Noting the oversight role of the Western Cape Budget Standing Committee, the committee, play over the Western Cape Provincial Executive, the executive, that this committee hereby resolves, 1, that the committee researches the feasibility of the initiation of a provincial money bills amendment procedure bill, 2, that the committee authorizes the request of legal, research and or procedural support from the relevant Western Cape Provincial Parliament WCPP division on the aforementioned matter, that the committee researches best
Money Bill amended procedures practices around the world, with a particular emphasis on the procedures to amend a provincial money bill in terms of the aforementioned matter. That the committee requests input and feedback from the WCPP Rules Committee regarding guidance on the parliamentary procedure for the initiation of a committee bill related to a provincial money bill amendment procedure bill in terms of the aforementioned matter. And five, that the committee authorizes the legal, research and or procedural support from the relevant WCPP divisions to be able to request through its chairperson on the committee's behalf documentation, presentation, briefing material and input from different parliaments across the world, government departments and entities, think tanks, NGOs and any other relevant stakeholders who have already implemented a bill on such a matter and or have completed relevant research on the matter, proposal, seconder. Just to give a little bit of context, my aim is by bringing this proposal for the committee to research a possibility of a bill in order to strengthen the ability of Parliament to hold the executive to account, to maximise public participation, to ensure that the budget is used in the best interest of the Western Cape, and to conduct oversight over the national department. In order to be able to amend a budget of a province, no province currently has legislation in this regard. National has already introduced and adopted their money bills procedure on a national level. And in order to amend the budget on a provincial level, you must have legislation in place. I've gone through all of the previous 5th Parliament minutes and notes and research documents. There are 2 research documents from the 5th Parliament that I will request the procedural officer to forward to all of the members. The procedural and legal put together for presentations in the previous Parliament. And I found in the minutes previously that the previous committee also wanted the executive member of the executive to introduce. Unfortunately, I fundamentally disagree with this approach. I believe that a bill of this nature needs to come from the provincial parliament and from the committee of the budget committee, essentially, because that is the committee through the authority of the provincial parliament that conducts oversight over the budget. And therefore, it would be very inappropriate for the Minister of Finance, for example, to brief us on the possibility of such legislation. I will take 3 hands and then I will put the resolution to the committee for a vote.
Okay, Chairperson, obviously as a seconder of this resolution, I concur with everything that you said. I mean, this is a second tier oversight and give the budget committees additional strength to be able to amend the budget, which is something I think all parliaments would like to do, and which is the reason I second this resolution. And yeah, and I hope that we can get this done speedily and as soon as reasonably possible, and there's all the research, and I would like to request that we do give the research as a timeline to provide this committee with the research, so we as members of this committee going forward can make informed decisions as to how and if we will proceed with this in the future. But I think it's important that we do give the researchers some sort of timeline, and they can also report back to this committee on a regular basis as to how far they are and what information do they need and how we can assist them, whether via the Rules Committee or the Parliamentary Oversight Committee, in strengthening their hand to ensure that they get all the research to assist us in making this possibly possible.
Second hand is Honourable Mbimbi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, in principle, I don't have a problem with this proposal, but can we maybe in future, Honorable Chair, that even if it's just going to be one line or heading, we know what this is, what is the item that is going to be raised, because now I have to just rely now on your information and everything which you also read me through. If it don't do, even if it's not detailed as it is, but just know what the item is going to be about, so that also maybe I can research it myself as well, and I can also maybe even speak to you, so that when I come here, at least I've got an understanding, because now it's difficult for me to make a constructive contribution in this. But also, hopefully then, it's also not the last time we are seeing it here, as you say, indicated, and maybe I'll be able to have an input, maybe meaningful input, when you give us all the information, especially the one that you said that you have read yourself and then you will be distributing to all the members.
Before I give an opportunity for a third hand to Honourable Philander, regarding the item for resolution, to my knowledge, there's no format or guideline for bringing a resolution like what I've done, written out. Because the committee can make resolutions on the floor, for example, in the committee, can come up automatically or can be sent in like beforehand. The reason I specifically typed it out such as this, because personally, because it's such a substantive matter, and because there were so many layers to what I would have liked the committee to resolve, I preferred it to be in writing so that members could see exactly what the resolution would be if the committee had to adopt it. However, we can ask the procedural officer to maybe look in some sort of guideline or procedure if we would like to submit a resolution in writing, for example, and then that draft can maybe be brought to the committee for consideration in the future.
So just a follow-up, Chair. Yeah. I tell you the reason I'm proposing it like that, because I want to be constructive in the committee and make a meaningful contribution and input as well. So if I've got an item beforehand, I'll be able either through you via the processing officer or any other member that are in the committee, I can consult with them and get their views and opinion and get more information. Now, when it comes like this, it's like it caught me, you can say it catches you off guard. But I take your point, I don't have a problem with that. Thanks for that.
Thank you, Honourable Mbembe. If the procedural officer can just capture it, that we'll be looking into a procedure for more substantive resolutions for this committee. Honourable Philander, the last third hand.
Thank you, Chair Lady. I support the proposal brought forward today, and I also agree with Honourable McKenzie in terms of timelines be set. And also at point 5 of the proposed resolution, that one also then indicate exactly which sources will be used in terms of parliaments or governments or NGOs or whatever, to be more specific and not a broad approach, but that we be specific into what exactly where we will be sourcing for that information.
Okay, members, regarding the timeline, I would suggest that perhaps we then include at number 6 that a particular date. Would 6 weeks be enough from today? Okay, so within 6 weeks, then can we just find out if that is feasible from the respective offices? And then further, I just want to... I've received advice that perhaps we should find from the researchers how long such a research task would take. So I would like to then request on the committee's behalf that I meet with the researcher and find out more or less the estimated time such a scope of this and size of this exercise would take. And then would it be feasible for me to then report back at the next committee meeting the feedback from the researcher, and then we, based on that, take a resolution on the timeline. So I put this resolution in today, and then regarding the sources, from my own research experience, and I'm speaking personally now, you often try to throw the net into the water as far and wide as you possibly can, and depending what you get back in terms of the facts, you determine which facts are relevant, which best practices are relevant. And that is the reason why I made point 5 so broad in terms of parliaments across the world, government departments and entities. I didn't limit whether it's provincial or national, think tanks, NGOs, and any other relevant stakeholders,
just so that should there be a member of the committee that would like someone to brief us on a particular matter, that it leaves that scope for that in the future. However, what the research has come up with, in terms of research based practice, I'm sure that footnotes and sources will be cited where information was received. And as a committee, I think perhaps we can then interrogate if we feel where a particular source came from, the methodology for the research, and so forth. Would that be okay?
That's
a really
good
answer. Okay. So, as chairperson, I would like to put the resolution to the committee.
Yeah, we could ask the contact.
Andrew McKenzie seconds. Thank you so much. And that completes the business of the house. I forgot. I said I'm going to open the floor up for resolutions regarding departmental matters. So departmental matters, I mean the presentation of the resolutions you want to put. Thank you. Okay. I'm
I would have thought the procedural office, I would have noted the request I made to the department on the information. Well, they didn't respond, so I assumed that that matter is noted for them to provide the information.
Okay, Honorable Nkondlo, what I'll do is I'm going to ask the procedural officer to create a summary of...
Okay, he will. Member Nkondlo, I did not note any of your, there was no request, substantial request when you said, can I have that, so I didn't note that. But if you can, if there's something in particular that you want, you can actually just mention it now. I don't want to get into a dialogue, Chair. I think I did, I think the procedural officer said she didn't hear me, because I assumed when the members were not answering that the take is, or in your summary, Chair, they will provide. I asked for the guidelines of the revenue collection. That is what I requested. If there is, if there is there, if I can get a copy so that I can read for myself. Again, you'd recall in the question on the performance, the minister indicated that there is an end of term review, and I'm sure if there is, can I then be privileged to get a copy of that review. Thank you.
Thank you. I think in terms of the end of term review specifically, that falls under the previous department, that will still be coming up. However, I speak under correction. If the procedural officer can just check for me. And if you could also just get the respective documentation for Honourable Kondlo, please. If there is something specific that you don't remember now, but it does come up, you're welcome to email the procedural officer and myself, depending on the matter. If there is nothing else, I will conclude the committee meeting. Thank you for your attendance today.